The Body in the Rose Garden. Part 5. Sergeant Grant's Report, The Man with the Close-Knit Eyebrows. When people are not aware of certain circumstances and incidents, but are burdened by a wrongdoing, however it is connected, or disconnected to the incident, they tend to be oblivious to the fact that they are in danger of being disclosed for their indiscretion. John Lewinson was not a career criminal, and blackmail was not something he would have considered had things been different. But they weren't different. The fact was, he was in a tough place, down and out in a city that had promised a better life than being nothing in Tiltbirdson, but proved to be a rather two-faced friend. He arrived in the city with a suitcase and a good job, a room in a boarding house with his eyes on a nice little apartment. Things went well for a few months, but suddenly his boss pulled the rug out from under him by laying him off, saying that John was not up to the job. The truth was different. The boss wanted the job for someone else, even though John was more than adequate. But none of that really matters. What did matter was, John was out of a job, and by the time he was running out of the money he had saved to let an apartment, he was evicted from his room and living on the streets. He tried to get assistance, but he didn't have enough time in. Then one day he saw Ellen Shippers going into a cafe. The mind can be treacherous when a person is desperate. He remembered how much he had loved Ellen a long time ago, and how he had lied to save her. His lie, though, was twofold. He lied to the police about what he saw, which was actually very little. He saw Ellen coming out of the woods. That's it. But he was certain she had done something terrible, but did not want to see her get in trouble. So he manufactured a story to fit, and it had worked. He lied to himself that Ellen would be so thankful she would agree to be his girl. Then Ellen went away to the city and never came back, and John was distraught with grief. He simply could never settle until his grief turned into anger and anger turned to hate. So when he saw Ellen and found out what she worked at, he devised a plan to get revenge, and to make some money as well. Hence the blackmail. And he was clever enough to do it, so no matter what, it could never come back on him. All the money she stole went into a special bank account, one that did not bear his name but which he had access to. All was going well until Ellen had had enough and had decided she must get rid of John. She had learned what had happened to Trevor the night he disappeared, and though it was murder, the killer had been discovered a few years later, which has nothing to do with this case. After John began blackmailing Ellen, she returned to Tiltbirdson and spoke with the police. That is how she learned she was no longer a suspect. After that, she turned on John. That evening, the night she died, she gave John some money and told him it was done, that he could go to the police if he wanted, but then he would have to confess to blackmail. I suppose Mr. Collier didn't hear that part, or if he did, didn't recall. The rest you know already. Inspector Trunk and Violet Cambridge listened to Sergeant Grant's report silently. There was not much to say. He had done a good job as far as it went. Sergeant Grant said, "What do we do about John Lewinson? He has confessed to blackmail and was near the scene of the crime around the time Ellen Shippers was murdered. But we have no direct evidence except what he admitted to. We will let others decide that, Sergeant. It will be examined when you submit your report to the CA. We have to concern ourselves with the moment. And at the moment we are back to square one with no witnesses and only two more mysteries. Who the smoker is and who owns the signet ring." Eyes in the shadow of evening watched the scene between the man and woman meeting clandestinely near the rose garden. They glinted in the light of the cigarette lighter. She drew in the smoke and let it out slowly. It was her third. She was smoking quickly, not wanting to be away too long. She was almost done when the woman from the rose garden started toward the tree she was hiding behind. She was desperate not to be found out. She didn't want the world to know she was a closet smoker. Just before Ellen got to the tree, the smoker stepped out. Their eyes met. Ellen turned and ran back toward the garden. The smoker jogged after her, not really a jog but a fast exaggerated walk. She didn't want Ellen to tell on her. All she meant to do was plead with her. She was nearly crying. "Ellen, stop. Please don't tell anyone. I'll quit smoking." Ellen smiled at the woman and said, "Don't worry. Your secret's safe. I like to take a puff myself now and then." Then she took a step backwards. Millie Banders squealed as Ellen fell straight back. "Be careful." But it was too late. Then, going to help Ellen up, she saw that Ellen wasn't moving. She just laid there staring into night through cold dead eyes. Millie ran and didn't stop until she was in her apartment on the second floor of the South Tower. All that night she paced until finally she decided what to do. The next morning she went for her usual jog after no one had reported finding a body. What better way to hide a truth than by discovering the dead body? In the end, when it finally became her time to be interviewed, she confessed what had happened. Inspector Trunk scolded. "If you would have come forward sooner, Miss Banders, it would have saved us a lot of man hours." Millie replied tearfully, "I was afraid you would arrest me for murder. After all she did step backwards after I confronted her. Maybe she would have just gone by and none of this would have happened." The real question is now, what about the needle in the ring if she died as Millie has described? It seems to have been an accident. A very freakish accident. But an accident nonetheless. Sergeant Grant said ponderously.